last class, please help me cook me. We discussed some of Moshe's background about the marriage of his parents. Okay, we did more parshanut last class than background of Moshe. Okay, so we left off where Moshe is being hidden. Remember the concept I mentioned last class, the Shmot Perikbet, that the detail given in chapter 2 of how Moshe's teva is prepared to save his life is the Bible's way of connecting one story to another. In this case, please recall that the other story is Noah building a teva to save the world. You will run into this all the time. There are whole prophets that do this. Whole sections of their prophecy is meant for you to think of, let's say, Mechiras Yosef, when I'm writing about some kind of trespass that's going on in my day. This is what rabbis do when they're brushes. Look at this terrible situation that's going on in the world today. And you know what? That was going on in Yechezkel too. Let's see how Yechezkel dealt with it. Right? No one can deny that the sale of Yosef was a blotch upon our history. Amos would turn to his audience and say, anybody here disagree? And then he'll tell them, well, let me tell you how we're behaving in the same way. Right? And that's really paraphrase of Sefer Amos. So too, when the Tanakh is describing in chapter 2 in our book about, who cares to describe how that little basket was prepared to save the world? You don't think she had to put pinch in between the slats of a basket? If you put a basket in the water, it'll sink in a second. The baby's dead. You're going to kill the baby faster than Pharaoh's men would. Right? So what are you doing? So the Bible says, oh no, she didn't just put it in a basket. She put tar, she put pitch, and she put it. Come on. What are you telling me this? Right? The Torah doesn't care to tell us any detail about how God created the world, right? But it's telling us the detail about how this woman made a basket to save her son. Just say she put him in a vessel to save him, right? You remember that? Okay, it's going to happen again and again. It's a particular narrative point that's very popular in the Torah. Okay, so now the boy's sister saves his life. We talked last class about the role of women so far in Sefer Bereishis through this story here. Right? We don't have any reference to the boy's father or older brother. We don't even know that he has a brother yet. We're going to find out later. Right? Not only do we say a brother, he has an older brother. Apparently this decree is relatively new. You're with me right now. The decree to kill the baby boys is relatively new because we don't see that this family, either the Torah doesn't care to tell us, we already know the Torah doesn't care to tell us about the birth of these two kids, right? The Torah doesn't care to tell us what machinations this couple had to do in order to save his older brother because the decree didn't exist then. That's fine. Right? But he has an older sister, a mother, the daughter of Paro, and there's a little thing about Shifra and Pua, who Chazal conveniently tell us is Chemet Mary. Rashi cared enough to actually put that he cares enough to tell us that those two women are actually Moshe's close family members, right? Where are the men? Right? Okay, we talked about that last class. There's an ingenious, I have to introduce you, we did this all semester. Please make sure to take notes or to be aware. There's a parish on the Torah by a man named Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid was the initiator of a movement in France and Germany in the 12th century called Chassidei Ashkenaz. His Talmud Muvak was Rabbi Lozer of Worms, known as the Rokeach. Chaos works is starting to become publicized now. He wrote 63 Sfarim, and most of them were destroyed by the Crusaders. I had the chus of bringing up one of his parish in Mishlei to the public. I have copies now. Some people want to see it.
Rav Yehuda Chassid has a very controversial parish to the Torah. I'm not going to tell you today why it's controversial. Rav Moshe Feinstein, you've heard of him, wrote two chuvas about this parish to the Torah. So controversial it was. And I just want to tell you, don't be surprised by the kinds of things you see in the parish of Rav Yehuda Chassid. Very avant-garde, things you generally don't find in other commentaries. Anyway, when Paro's daughter opens up the little teva, the little basket, to look at him, right? Let's start with that. Right? It says, "Vatiftach vatirayu es hayeled." It's perfectly legitimate to call a 3-month-old baby a yeled, right? But then it says, "Vihine na'ar bochet." She saw there's a na'ar crying there. A lot of discussion in the commentaries over why the pasuk refers to the same 3-month-old baby as a yelet and then a na'ar in the same pasuk. Right? Rabban dispenses of it. He says this is perfectly legitimate because you look at the way na'ar is used elsewhere in the Tanakh, and it's a perfectly okay. Let's dispel with that. But you want to be creative? Who is this na'ar? Close. It's Aaron. Aaron is crying, and she heard a baby crying, a 3-year-old crying nearby about, "What are you doing to my brother? Why did you take my brother from me? We just had him." What's the advantage of such a inserting such a commentary into our pasuk? First of all, it explains why the pasuk refers to yellow and not her, one end to the other. But this is also something important that the Torah has to do. Something important that the Torah has to do. Because when Moshe is busy complaining to God at the burning bush shortly, which is really the beginning of his course, and he says, I don't want to do this, I can't do it, I'm not good, they're not going to believe me, I don't speak well enough. He gives him 5 different reasons why I shouldn't be doing this. At the end, God tells him, "Listen, Moshe, you're going to do this. You're so much going to do this that I already spoke to your brother." Spoke to Aaron first. There's something in Tanakh that indicated God spoke to Aaron before he spoke to Moshe at the burning bush. How do I know? Because Aaron's prep is on his way already, he said. I had to speak to him. I'm speaking to you first today, and Aaron I spoke to a week ago. He's almost here already, Moshe. He's on his way to take you back the best route. Right? I'm going to do miracles for you, but it has to be a savior. Your brother is here to take you back to Egypt. What detail does Hashem tell him right after that? Remember the simple detail about Aaron? And when he sees you, he's going to be happy. What? Again, I want you to be critical readers of text. Right? What? Who cares that Aaron's going to be happy? Well, that's a minor detail of the text. Aaron's going to tell Moshe that what he has to do to get back to Egypt in order to fulfill this yitzhiyah that God promised Abraham, whether he's happy or not. What's the point of telling us your brother, when he sees you, he's happy for you? What has to be cleared up? This is a little like what we said on Tuesday regarding the role of women in Sefer Bereishis. What has to be cleaned up in Sefer Bereishis from Sefer Bereishis? Especially older brothers not taking it so easily that their younger brother keeps on doing better. From Cain to Hevel, right? Chazal tell us that Noah was the younger brother, Shem is the younger brother, Avram is the younger brother. Okay, that's not. The one with Shem is quite evident that he's the younger one, even though he's mentioned first. But it says that Yitzchak was 2 years older. But we do know that Yitzchak is younger than Ishmael, Yaakov is younger than Esav, Yosef is younger than his brothers. Right? And it comes to a head between two sons of Yosef. When Yaakov does this, you know what I'm talking about, right? All of you, right? With me? And Yosef doesn't like it. He says, "Dad, come on. You know what problems you caused me with your favoritism. Why are you doing this with my sons?" So I can picture you. I'm not fabricating this. It was safe, be careful, this is sacred gracious. And sacred gracious, the younger one, who is Ephraim, always prevails. Right? But he just says, Yosef, I'm looking into the future. I'm going to do the same thing when I bless all of you and your brothers. But I just know that this one is going to be greater. Right? Was it prophecy? Was it because of something he saw in them now? That will leave to the Mefarshim Parshas Vayechi. Right? But what we see is that there is a natural struggle. You are either an only child, so you may not know about it. But if you have a sibling, whether you're the older one or you know, this rivalry, right? We have to fix the natural rivalry in Sefer Bereishis. And I think if Menashe helps to fix it, because we only see Yosef objecting, we only see Menashe objecting. Right? I don't know how they played together and whether they had the same amount of morals when they were growing up, or they probably grew up with some degree of certain wealth that their cousins didn't know about, right? Living in Egypt. It does seem that they readily joined the other tribes, so that we find in Menashe the paradigm of Jews growing up in an unfriendly moral and religious surroundings, but yet stay with the program, and that's according to some of our Shemar, we say in Simcha Elokim to find the Menashe on Friday night, when we give prophets, and then every kippur we have to do, right? So that's this Aaron aspect here, okay? Aaron is inserted here, I think, by Rav Yehuda Chosid, because I see his sister there, his sister cares very much for him, and I see Aaron, and he is happy. Where does happiness come from? Samach b'libo, he's happy in his heart. So let me tell you, one of the most important aspects of reading Bible, because this is very important to me as a pulpit rabbi and as a teacher of Bible. Yes, the scholarship is right. Knowing your grammar is important. Knowing your ancient languages and how Akkadian and Ugaritic bounces off the Hebrew and Arabic in order to really understand what the word means, right? But if there's one overarching message of the Bible that if they're not teaching it to you, they're cheating you, is that the Bible has a message, and that is you reap what you sow. Plant the seeds, you put it to the ground, will produce what you deserve. Now that's the message of the Bible. There's a problem called theodicy, right? That's questioning how what we believe is a good God allows bad things to happen. The problem with theodicy is when that doesn't happen. Right? The Bible speaks in absolute terms. It says, this will happen to you if you listen to me. Think of Akev or A, right? The Tochacha a few weeks from now. This will happen to you if you listen. This will happen to you if you don't. Blessing and curse. I don't know what God is saying. God, I like to believe in you, but I got to tell you. Not most of the time, but a lot of the times, I don't see it happening. That's the opposite. That's why when you become parents and you have a 2-year-old who tends to run out into the street, right? You show them a red light and you say, when the color is that, you won't cross the street. You cross the street when the color is like that, a car will hit you and cause you great, great pain. You may never walk again. Don't walk into the street when the light is red. Right? I have a problem. My son lives in Beit Shemesh. There's no lights in Beit Shemesh. There's only call it kikar, round bell. So he has a daughter who runs out of the street. They're so protected. The life in Beit Shemesh is so like a bungalow colony that yesterday she took her younger brother, right, while her mother was just in the bedroom, the two were playing in the living room. She put her younger brother in a carriage and took him out for a walk. They crossed two streets. She went, she understand, but she just guessed where she went, and that's where she was. She's 5, he's 2. How do you convince this 5-year-old he can't do this? Okay. Your bus is ready, go right, fast, right, I'm in there, oh my goodness.
In a way, you can say that it's a great life that a five-year-old feels comfortable to do such a thing, right? His older sister lives in even a better place where they in Givat Zeev, where everyone runs out in the street at all hours. It's mamash a fulfillment of Zechariah's prophecy. Old ye shvu zekeinim zekeinot, the old men, the old women, the children will play in the streets in Yerushalayim with nothing to worry about. But we parents have to teach children there are things to worry about. There are cars that might not see you, you're too small. There are people who actually, it's hard to teach children this. There are people out there that need to cause you harm. And I have to protect you from it. Right? We live in an antiseptic society where we're putting so much of this stuff on our hands that we don't know how to fight it. Kids need to get dirt on their hands. Kids need to know a little about what's lurking out there. So you tell them, if you cross the street when the light is red, a car, what's the next word? Will hit you. That's the way you have to say. You don't say a car. You can tell a five-year-old, okay, 17% of the time a car will come close to hitting you, 4% of the time a car will actually hit you. The other 83%, you're going to get away with it. Is that what you tell a five-year-old? You go to the statistics, depending on what the street is. On this street, here are the three statistics. But on that street, 74% of the time it won't hit you, and 26% of the time it's going to be close. That's ridiculous. You just say, a car will hit you, Sean. And as the kid grows older, he'll get the picture. And he says, I'm waiting here for the light to change. It's late at night. I don't see a car coming from far away. I'm going to cross. And then they start crossing it. I crossed 12 times this week when the red light, no car hit me. My father must be, he's lying, but he's really in the north, you know, and tell me the way things are. Right? And he keeps crossing. What does the father mean when he says if you cross at the red, a car will hit you? And do you think that if the father sees from the window the kid crossing from the red, and he's hoping that a car will come and hit him so I can be true about what I say? Let me tell you, the father above never wants to punish us. Never. No matter how bad we are. Why does punishment come to us? The same reason why cancer comes to someone who smokes 3 packs a day for 40 years. What punishment? These are consequences. Getting hit by a car is not a punishment for crossing at the red light. It's a consequence. And the Kaddish Baruch Hu up above tells us what are the consequences of our behavior. It doesn't always happen. In fact, each thing you have to see. There are 20 trillion things that can happen in the history of man, and each one has a percentage. And I'm telling you high percentages. If you behave like that, you're going to go like the Amorites and Moabites. If you burn your children to Molech, this is what's going to happen to you. I will turn my Shechina in a country where they're burning children to Molech and not in a country where they're burning children to me. So that's not me. So I'll leave, and Israel will be given to drought and other problems that like any other country. Right? Not even always so quickly. But ultimately, it will catch up to you. But you are always my children. What am I getting at through all this? Is that the creed of the Bible is you reap what you sow, you get what you deserve. Miriam waited a little bit for Moshe, so the next row I'm going to wait for her in the desert. Hear it? Aaron was happy for Moshe in his heart. He's the one getting to wear this thing. It's hard. Your life will be better served if you live like this. That's what Ramban says in the Igeres Ramban. Look for those important messages. Right? Did this person lose hearing in 1 year because he wants to have a shahara he shouldn't have heard? Maybe it was something that he was born with. Maybe it's something that made his cell phone use was bad. Did he listen too close? I don't know. But if the person felt that he was losing most of his hearing because he heard Lashon Hara and now he's going to be careful for the rest of his life never to hear Lashon Hara, is he being foolish? If we actually believe that Sinas Chinam destroyed the Second Temple and not an overwhelming force of Roman might against a fractious Jewish nation could get its act together. Right? Are we being historically foolish? Or are we saying immorality lost us the temple? Morality will get it back. That's why we're here. Right? Now, I know this is still a Tanakh class, so let's get back to the Tanakh. By putting Aharon in the middle of the story, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid wants us to look at, remember we called this yesterday foreshadowing? Remember we talked about that? Okay. How did she know it's a Hebrew? Oh, goodness. She saw that he was circumcised. She said, only Hebrews are hiding the babies like this. Right? You don't have to doubt anything about that. Okay. And as if to show that there's something, what an amazing deal this girl, this sister cuts for him. Right? She gets taken home and get paid for and save his life. Chazal are going to like this woman. This last part. She shows up to him. Okay, let's leave her for now and let's talk about the point. Pasuk, this is where Sidney. Who is the subject of the Tzvi'ehu? When you have a pasuk like this that doesn't say who's doing the verb, what would you usually do? See who's talking. But I mean, you don't have to do that here because that plus the test said take the boy back home and let him be raised and nursed by his mother. Now, just the first impression. Don't think too much. Even though the pasuk says vayidal hayeled, how long was this boy with his mother? Well, what was the purpose of sending the boy back?
To nurse.
So it's an ESAM. How long do you nurse? In the ancient world, nursing is 2 years. It's just unusual to refer to him as a yigdal after 2 years. But no, that's okay too. Right? Ramban says he was 2 years old when he was sent back. Are you with me? Rashi doesn't like a yigdal to refer to a two-year-old. He says she held him for 13 years. I want him back when he starts getting interesting. I don't want a terrible twos, and I don't want a 7-year-old. I want a 13-year-old. I don't think it's you to see which one is more correct. Ramban sounds better. Rashi's purpose isn't so interested in what it sounds like, but how does it reflect the meaning of this word by Yigdal? Because the next pasuk also begins by Yigdal. It has it in it. Okay. It doesn't really matter, but the child has been with his mother. Notice Bativieu, the father's still not around. So who would you say this? Do I have a unanimous agreement in this class? Although I did trip you up before with the Na'ar, but I have a unanimous agreement that the subject of Bativieu is the child's mother. The child was brought to his mother in Pasuk Tes, so that when Pasuk, this is what you said before, Matthew, so that when Pasuk Yud says, child grew, and she brought him to Bas Par. That's the child's mother. There's no room for anybody but that. Not Miriam. Okay, got it? Child's sister was not called to nurse him. So when they Pasuk Tes, it's your answer. Look at the last person who's mentioned in Pasuk Tes. That's the child's mother. So when Pasuk Yud says, she brought him to Bas Paro, okay, by he lo b'vei. Who is the subject of law? Bas Paro. Okay? Here's where ancient language is coming in. In the Egyptian, ancient Egyptian, right? Amazingly, just I'm going to phonetically spell it with Hebrew characters. This means my son. Okay? See this word? What would that be? What?
Son of Ra.
Son of Ra. Okay? So it's interesting that Moshe, the way we translate Moshe in English, Moses, is very close to what she probably called him in Egyptian. Why am I even talking to you about referring to Moshe with an Egyptian name?
Because it was his husband, Binyan's actually
had a Jewish name. He may have had a Jewish name. What's interesting is that the Gemara in Sanhedrin says he did. He had seven Jewish names. Not one of them is Moshe. Have you heard this? Victor, Ikutiel, Tovia. Where did the rabbis get these names from? A pasuk in Leviticus. Come on, talk to me. Divrei Yamim. Okay. The beginning of Divrei Yamim. It goes through a lot of ancient history from Adam straight through with a lot of names. It tells you what the Gemara says. Shimshon's mother and the background of Rus and then Machlon and Chilion and other names that people had. Okay, welcome to the Divrei Yamim. It's a party. Alright? So the Gemara talks about someone named Bithya, the daughter of Paro, and these are the names of her children. The rabbis say all of these children actually reference to Moshe. Okay? So that is but back to the logic, most paraphrases. Let's get back to the logic. The child became to her like a son. The her is, of course, Paro's daughter. Right? Notice the drift of who are these people in this lesson? Because now, according to what Matthew said before, that when I have a verb in a pasuk, but no subject, who is the subject of that verb? Well, sometimes the last person that you mentioned. So who would be giving the child this name, like Yikra Shmo Moshe?
Pasar.
Okay. Ki min hamayim yishisihu, because I drew him from the water. What's the problem? What? Yes. That's not what drawing from water means in Egyptian. Okay, there's one parish on your page that actually quotes this out. I think it would be without you. Nezra, of course. Nezra spoke ancient languages. He spoke Arabic. He was a linguist, but a greater extent than Rashi. Although I think Rashi, as I'll show you throughout the semester, had a greater sense of the Hebrew language than anybody. But Ibn Ezra says, I spoke to Egyptians, and I know the ancient language. Ibn Ezra, back to them, is not, a lot of time, but still, they must have known maybe more than we do now. But he says that, the name Monis means to draw from water in ancient Egyptian. Okay? Nice. So why doesn't the Bible call him that? Well, because I'd rather give him a Hebrew name. In Hebrew, what she said in Egyptian, that's Moshe. Which is a whole new approach to how he got his name. Right? By the way, Ibn Ezra, you can say, well, he's just a scholar who listens to Ibn Ezra. The Das HaKadim, the Bali HaTosfos, says the same thing here. The Das HaKadim were really the students of Rabbi Lachasi. Right? The Das HaKadim, the Bali HaTosfos. Not one particular person, but it's Tosfos. Very often what appears in Das HaKadim, the Bali HaTosfos, which doesn't appear in all of your... Like this one, has it? Do you have it?
This is the new Zoom,
alone. Oh,
yeah.
Sorry. Okay, so Das HaKadim mentions the same thing. He says, how, if this is talking about about Bas Paro, how is it that all of a sudden in a fit of prophecy she starts naming the child because of something that she did in Hebrew? She spoke in Egyptian. I mean, if you ever see the movie The Ten Commandments, you see it. It's the same nonsense where the movie says, and because I drew you from the water, I shall call you Moses. Huh? Well, I'm Andrew. Right? What are you calling him Moses for? What does Moses have to do with drawing from water? Right? It's a foolish line in the movie. But they did it. I'm sure they debated whether, you know, how do we get him his name? Right? Okay. So back to Rabbi Yehuda Chassid. He says the subject of Atikra is Yocheved. Can you do that? Can you take an antecedent like that and say, well, does Yocheved appear in Pasuk Yud? No name appears in Pasuk Yud. What verb is Yocheved on? Batviyehu. So as long as she's in the Pasuk, I mean, what he did with Vihine Narboche is not any less of a stretch than saying that the subject of a tikra is. It's just that she's not the one who drew him from water. Sforno points out something very interesting about Moshe. He says that if his name came because he was drawn from water, any grammarian here can tell me what should his name have been? You know your binyanim? You ever study these things? Go back to sixth grade, I think. His name should have either been Nimsha or Mashur. That means drawn from water. Moshe means to draw others from water. So, and then, according to this, these women here, whoever's naming it, is making a prediction that I see some of the Egyptians were very much like this. They saw omens in everything. And this is, according to the Medrash, why they're killing boys in the first place. This is an omen that one of the boys who are now is going to ruin us. And we don't even know if he's going to be raised as a Hebrew or as an Egyptian. So they started killing Egyptians also, says Rashi. Okay. Taka, what's the irony? Taka was raised as an Egyptian. Okay, so much for his name. Okay, let's talk about Vayibayamim Harim. Vayibayamim implies, doesn't say Vayibayamim Harabim Harim, but means that there's some time passed. Now, does it say how old he is? Right? We'll read through and we'll try to take a guess how old he is. There is a medrash that says, two opinions in the medrash that actually say how old he is. Because when we meet, the next time we meet him after he has to run away because of this, this next 5 or 6 psukim, 10 psukim, take place over a matter of days. Right? The next time we meet him, he is 80. What happened in between? Right? Because we meet him next in chapter 3 at the burning bush. Right? This is the middle of chapter 2 here. Right? There's a lot of time. However old he is here, you've got to figure out. This is 40, 60 years going on here. Out of nowhere, right? Okay, all right, fair enough. Vayidam Moshe vayetzei elecha. Moshe grew. Vayetzei elecha. Are you curious about anything about vayetzei elecha? What's curious here? At least curious according to Ramban, maybe not according to Rashi. What am I talking about? Remember I told you before how old he was? We all agreed he was 2 when he was brought back. He was taken to nurse. He finished nursing at 2, not 13. Right? Why did Rashi say he was 13? In order to fit the word, make God. Okay? So, if he was brought back at the age of 13, then I don't have such a problem if I didn't say Elohim. But if he was brought back at the age of 2, what would be your problem? What? How does he know that these are his brothers? Alright, I have an answer to that. Explain to me. How could you answer that? Vayetzei elecha.
I'm sure there was an ethnic difference between the Jews and the
Israelites. Yeah. No, I'm not even saying, I'm not even going that far. He did know their drums. It says in the pasuk, it's saying Elochot, and he didn't do it. Right? What did he do today for the first time? However old he is. He went to see how the Egyptians are treating these slaves. Didn't bother me until now, it didn't work in my mind until now. Anybody have a tissue? I think. Didn't know about this until now, didn't make the news until now, right? Okay, but Ramban thinks that by Yetzei Yerachot means he knew they were. Right? That he was one of them. Maybe because of the way he looks, maybe the. Right? And Israelis and Egyptians close enough, I don't know. It's debatable. Ramban just writes, how did he know he was Jewish to go out to look at them? He says, somebody told him. That's all. He writes Yitochein, and somebody told him. If you know, you've seen the movie The Ten Commandments, you see when he finds out that he's Hebrew because of his the garment, that someone. It's a brilliant exposition of a Medrash, that there's a garment that proves to him that he's a Hebrew. Because the Medrash says the Jews deserve to be redeemed because they didn't change the way they dressed. And they changed the way they dressed, Moshe would have never have found out he was Jewish. Because they would have started dressing like Egyptians.
It's really quite
amazing. In the beginning of the movie it says we consulted with rabbinic authorities and the Midrash in order to make this movie. It's well done. You know, a lot of it is Narish, but some of the stuff that they had in there, you know, this is interesting, based on Midrash. Okay. So, the Bible doesn't care to tell us how he knew he was his brethren. It may very well be that he didn't even know that they were. On this day. Okay? Right? So he goes out to see them. In Vayar Bisiv Losam. Notice the stress I put on. Look at Rashi, please, with me. Matthew, read the Rashi on Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayar Bisiv Losam. Okay, that's a good exposition of the word Vayar, Tanenov. He put his eyes, but also his heart, Liyot Meitzar Aleihem, to be pained over what he saw. How does Rashi know that? Say, Vayar et ha'et. Well, I see a sense of data. This is probably a pen. My experience tells me what this is. How does Rashi know that Vayar b'siv lo sam means that he pained himself to suffer with it? Whereas it's a five-word Rashi. Figure it out. Talk to me. Let's do a simple exercise. Translate the two words. Siv lo sam means their pain. Their struggles, their strife. Can see something that looks like this person's pain. I actually once gave a sermon about that when Patrick Ewing missed the layup that would have put Knicks into the finals. He gave out such a scream, and the New York Post had it as its back cover, but it looks like he celebrated. You couldn't tell whether the scream was for joy or for terrible pain. It sometimes happens that you can see in the hospital, you can see someone who can't talk, and then he's. Right, so what, translate the words. Translate the words for me.
It's not
of course. It's not Vayar Simbolitam or Vayar et Simbolitam, and to use a filler word in Hebrew. Right? Rabbis generally darshan esses because kach et ha-sefer means kach ha-sefer, means the same thing. So what's et doing there? Kabeid olich v'yimecha means the same as kabeid et olich v'yimecha. So what's the et doing there? So rabbis tend, when they want a darshan, they tend to dapde, they say the et comes to teach something else. Right? There's someone in the Gemara that darshans every one of them until he couldn't darshan once. He said, I'll give reward for the prisha, just like I got reward for the drisha. Stop doing that. I reject all of them because I can't do it for all cases. Being kind of his general purity that he stood up for Shimon Bar Yisrael. So, Vayar Bisivlotam means something different than Vayar Et Sivlotam. Do you all agree? That's how Rashi works. Vayar Sivlotam means that he looked and he saw, look, those people look like they're in pain. Vayar Bisivlotam implies an empathy. Get it? Which is where Rashi is. Okay? This is a special person here. It's not like other Egyptians who just see the suffering of these Hebrews just as a necessary element of growing up our nation. Without them, we wouldn't have these pyramids, or we wouldn't have the harvests. And he says, that's the way I was raised. And it made sense while I was growing up, but see, I prefer Moshe's younger here. I don't like him at 40. The two opinions of the Medrash says one says he's 20, one says he's 40. I prefer 20. Did Moshe have to wait till 40 to come up to this decision? And you could say, he should have made this decision at 8. Yeah, but they didn't let him out of the house at that point. He's going out now, 20. I think that when Chazal say he's 20, it's one and the same with the Medrash, the Gemara that says in Moikotin that you're not chayef kares until you're 20. You can be chayav misa at 13 because society needs to be protected from a 14-year-old brigand and murderer. But you're not chayav kares until you're 20. You don't formulate stark opinions until you're 20. You can't be held responsible for kares. The Beis Din will take care of you physically, but from God, you eat on your kippur, you're doing malach on your kippur, you're doing things behind closed doors with someone that's married and no one saw you. Okay, you're not chayav kares till you're 20. Moshe is 20 when this happens. It's one and the same with the rabbi saying that when Sarah was 100, she was as guiltless as 20. You hear that? 20, you could be plenty guilty at 20. I know, but in kares, the Rashi. I'm giving you an example of something I think is actually a mistake in Rashi. From Berlinger, the scientific edition of Rashi, points out that the real original Rashi was when she was 100, she was as pretty as 20. When she was 20, she was as guiltless as 7. Right. I'm telling you too much right now. Let's go on. Okay. So he's 20, and he says, I've formulated an opinion about this. My entire nation is built on evil. And they have turned other human beings into beasts of burden to reap harvests that they won't eat, to build edifices they will never live in, and this is wrong. Now you see why Moshe is saving the world? Okay? No one before this man ever thought that there's anything wrong with this. He's about to be banished from the country for thinking so. So, Vayar Ish Mitzri Make Ish Ivri Me Echov. So the Pasuk wants to remind us, I think this is incontrovertible at this point, he knows he's Hebrew. Does he stand up for the weaker one because we know he's Hebrew? Hey, this is my homeboy, this is my cousin, this could be my, who knows who this is, right? Remember in the movie he saves a woman's life? From being crushed under one of the pyramids, one of the stones, and it turns out to be his mother. When he finally meets her and introduces her, you're the one I saved under that stone. That's the way Hollywood works. It doesn't really matter who it is, right? Who's the man, if you saw the movie, who's the man he saves here? Yahushua. Yes. Don't you see what the movie's doing? It's engaging in the same thing the rabbis probably do when they say that Shifrin Pua Yocheb and Miriam. But sometimes it's just better to say that this was just a person. Why did you save her, the master builder says, and stop all this building? This is because she was an old woman. Well, what's she to you? She's just an old woman. And you find out later, it's his mother. Right? She's just another slave. Come on, if we stopped all the work to save single... 100 slaves a day die. If we would stop our work to save one slave, we'd never build those cities. And Moshe starts to think, maybe that's wrong. You know, we're constantly born with suppositions, and sometimes it takes a thinking person to say, maybe we're wrong about all that. Right? And that's Moshe. Before him, it's Abraham, actually. Right? But that's Moshe. Right? And he sees Vayar Ish Mitzri Makeh Ishivri Me'echad. Notice the Vayar twice. Can someone, this is what I really want to do all semester. Rewrite a word here in Pasuk Yud Aleph for the second Vayar. Why do I have to be told twice in the Pasuk? Vayar, Vayar.
Message of empathy.
Why Vayar twice? Replace Vayar with a little biblical Hebrew word. Vayar ish mitzri makeh ish ivri. Sorry, Vayar v'siv lo sam. Vayhi imish mitz. It's workable, and there might be a pasuk like that, but it's such a better Hebrew word than that. Very close to the word vayihi, but... What? No. Would you agree vayhi nei? Right? Vayar v'sivlo sam v'hinei ish mitzri makeh ish ivri me'echad. Is with me, all right, everybody? You agree? V'hinei would have been a simpler. He saw into their struggles, and he saw. It's vayar, vayar.
He missed two separate occasions.
That is probably a simpler shot than what I want to tell you. Put his last over. Yes, Vayar v'siv lo sam is what he did for 2 weeks. And then after constantly making an evaluation of what he's seeing, on one particular day, he saw something that was different. Every day they're getting whipped to move for this guy's killing this guy. This guy could be dead in 2 minutes. I saw what they're doing and I have to build cities, I get that. But this is wrong. Right? That's not what I want to say, but it's pshat for why you have Vayar twice. That's how we write commentaries. Right? Okay. But I would like to give you as an assignment to read Bereishis Perek Yud Ches. Bereishis Perek Yud Ches, the first, there's 4 or 5 something. Guys, do this. Most people don't do assignments in IBC. Right? Do this before Shabbos. Right? Just look up. I would just say, just the first two psukim. The first two psukim. Look for a similar phenomenon in Bereishis Perek Yud Ches. Okay? And ask the same question. You may want to give the same answer Moshe gave, or maybe a different kind of answer, although I don't think you can give the same answer here. Right? I mean, it's so partial that if you could just look up the two, okay, you'll get it in a second. Alright? What's going on there? What phenomenon is taking place in Bereishis Yud Ches? This is where Hashem appears to Avram, and Avram sees the three men in the distance, right? What is going on, and then even in spite of what Moshe just did with the Vayar, try to give two different interpretations of what Vayar means. Okay? We don't mean any soul. Right? But after looking at Bereishis Yud Ches, Pasuk Aleph and Bet, try to come back to our Pasuk and figure out what's going on. Okay, got it? And then maybe we'll fit it into what we saw. We'll remind ourselves on Tuesday that the two Vayars may be sometime apart. Pasuk is allowed to do that. Okay. Alright, guys. Again, remember the course is online. Usually it takes a couple of days to remember Richard.